Conventional doors banged open, and more battle hammers charged into the fray. The audience chamber's walls echoed with the cries of battle, the ring of metal on metal. Stokely ran to the unexpected pit and slid down to his knees beside its edge, other dwarves joining in, including several with ropes and grapnels. The sheer walls, so sheer and smooth, it was as if the stone had simply vanished, fell away for more than 20 feet to a lower tunnel running beneath the audience chamber, and there lay the broken dwarves, two looking dead, two crawling, and one pulling himself back to his feet, having survived the fall. Stokely started to call down to him, but the poor fellow began to jerk this way and that, and it took a moment for Stokely to register that the dwarf was being hit with missiles, hand crossbow bolts likely. A brilliant flash of sizzling light defeated Stokely's next attempt to call out as a lightning bolt stole the darkness. And when it passed, only one dwarf was still trying to crawl, and none were standing. Over went the ropes, dwarfs leaping onto them to rappel down to their kin. Stokely, too, took a rope in hand. "No, no," cried another dwarf, a priestess named Brimble, who was one of Stokely's most trusted advisers. Stokely paused and looked to her for an explanation while others began their descent. "It's a magical passwall," Brimble cried. "They can dispel—" Before she even finished, Stokely felt the weight of the rope disappear, and as he stumbled back a bit, overbalanced by the suddenly diminished weight, he looked to the pit that wasn't a pit any longer, but simply the floor, as it had been. And dwarves had started down there. Several of those brave dwarves lay on the floor now, right next to Stokely, having been ejected from the tunnel that was not a tunnel.
"Where's McGritz? He was on the rope ahead of me,"
one cried, leaping up to his feet, and two others expressed similar concerns for dwarves ahead on their respective ropes as well.
"In the tunnel below, then," Brimble replied.
Stokely threw down his rope and drew out his battle axe from over his shoulder.
"Plenty to hit here, then," he cried,
and led the charge into the side of the Drider goblin line. More dwarves poured in from the side tunnels, but so too came the drow, and the dwarves hacking through the goblin ranks soon found more formidable foes, quicker and more deadly, and far more skilled with the blade. The advance bogged down, the lines dissipated, and the room became a tumble of confusion, with battles in every corner.
"A blade wins a duel, but magic wins a battle," Ravel said to Tiago as they neared the battle.
"How long will our tunnel remain?" Tiago asked.
"The better part of the night, unless we choose to remove it," the confident mage replied.
No sooner had the words left his mouth, though, than the last expanse of that magically created tunnel became stone once more. And in the corridor not far from the two drow nobles, several other drow, ejected by the lapsing magic, pulled themselves to their feet. Tiago turned a scowl on his companion.
"They have priests," Ravel explained, and calmly, as if this was a not unexpected complication. "To more conventional tunnels, then. We have scouted them extensively and will find our way."
His calm was not persuasive, though, and Tiago continued to scowl as he swung his lizard mount around and waved for the others to follow him, and quickly. Ravel called ahead to a pair of his fellow wizards, and they ran off, leading the way and motioning for the main drow contingent to follow. Ravel and his magical peers had indeed scouted the tunnels in this part of the dwarven complex, and could make their way to the throne room through more conventional routes.
"We will get there," the brash Zorlaran wizard told Tiago.
What he didn't add, however, was that it would take some time, likely more time than those forces caught in the throne room could afford. Tiago's returning look, however, showed that he saw right through that phony confidence. A dozen drow, a handful of driders, and a few score of goblins had gotten into the throne room, the main dwarf stronghold, before the passwall tunnel had been dispelled. A powerful force by most standards, they were up against the bulk of the fierce dwarves of the complex and were without magical aid. The young Baenri warrior was trained enough and seasoned enough to understand what they'd likely find when they reached that stronghold. Tiago grimaced and cursed the clever dwarves when the ground rumbled in the distance as more rigged tunnels collapsed. The dozen and two goblins fleeing the battle, which had become a rout, almost made it out of the room.
But as they finally breached the door, they found not an open corridor waiting for them, but a quartet of grim-faced dwarves, holding firm in the narrow exit, two abreast and two deep. The lead goblins hesitated, but their frantic kin pushed them ahead, and even when they were dead, one skull split by a battle axe, the other crushed by a warhammer, those leading goblins remained upright, pinned between the crush of their desperate kin and the braced shields of the sturdy dwarves.
"Can't hold 'em," warned Trigor Hornbrook, a yellow-bearded shield dwarf in the front rank.
He lowered his shoulder some more and managed a weak swing of his heavy hammer, but had to retract it immediately to doubly brace the shield against the press. He was the largest and strongest dwarf under Kelvin's cairn, so those words struck an alarm indeed. The corridor widened just beyond the door, and if the goblins got through that bottleneck, they'd swarm. His companion beside him grunted, too strained to even articulate his concern. To the surprise of Trigor and his struggling sidekick, the two in the second rank didn't press in more tightly, but suddenly ran off.
"How now?" Trigor roared at them, and the other dwarf grunted again.
A goblin spear propped in between the shields then, nicking Trigor's shoulder, and the sting just made him set himself more firmly and push back with all his considerable strength.
"Back!" came the call behind him, and the two returned, and Trigor understood when black-shafted pole arms prodded out beside him, stabbing past the dead goblins to weaken the press behind.
"Well thinked!" Trigor congratulated.
For just back of their position stood some stone statues, and the artists had completed the sentry sculptures with actual pole arms, albeit of simple iron instead of prized mithril or adamantine. Despite the desperate situation, Trigor couldn't help but chuckle when the pole arm stabbed past him again, and he noted a stone hand, broken off at the wrist, still grasping the iron shaft. The goblins came on again more furiously, and the shield dwarves began to slide once more, and the pair behind them stabbed with abandon, trying to break the press. They could not, though, despite the goblin blood pooling on the floor, and for a brief moment the four thought their position surely lost. But then the press disappeared, and the four soon realized it to be the last desperate move of the fleeing goblins, as Stokely and his boys caught up to them inside the room.
"Well fought!"
Stokely congratulated when the last of the wretched goblins breathed its last. Trigor looked past him into the throne room to note the carnage. It was hard to visually separate the bodies enough to determine where one torn corpse ended and the next began, so tight had been the fighting. Despite that chaos, the young warrior dwarf noted many of his kin among the piles of dead.
"The drow have gained this level, and..."